Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about review of electromagnetism laws. Now I'm getting into it, and there's just reading, books from the actual old textbooks from the 70s. It's sort of a bit of a grind to get through, and I sort of read, and I must admit, fall asleep. As you sort of go through school, you learn a series of cool pictures. It's like going to Santa's cave, where you just catch a picture of Santa through one angle, and then another picture of Santa on a poster, and another bit of parade, and the type of stuff. I just mean to say that you assemble you arrive at electromagnetism after seeing a few things, seeing a piece of fluff jump onto a comb, or your hair stand on end, and then there's a big story about how your radio and your microphone, what's it, your mobile phone, all rely on this electromagnetic radiation that's put into school. I don't know how much that sticks with various people. Then you get a grab bag of little stories. You get Coulomb's law, you get Faraday's law of induction. As you go on, you get the Ampere force law, Ampere's law of magnetic induction. You don't tend to get that much. You don't get Maxwell's law of electron flux, or Maxwell's law. You don't get that at all. You do get Faraday's law. Eventually you go to university, you get the Biot-Savart law. You get all these different laws. And this is what it was actually like at the start, around 1830, 1840. There were all these different laws. And they were put together, finally, and tied up in bow, 20 different laws, different structures. And by and by, people reduced that to four main equations with E, the electric field, magnetic field, the permeability and permeability. They're two different things for electrical and magnetic response for getting it across. And you come along like this, and those 20 laws got eventually condensed down to integral laws, four integral laws, and then that got condensed a little bit more to differential laws. So rather than adding things up, you can just consider for what an individual cell would be like. Some complexities and bows tied on it. Then it went from electric field and magnetic field with really deeply inside it to potentials. And when you looked at the electrostatic and the electrical and magnetic potential, the V and A, you then had a set of equations which explicitly had time involved in it. It sort of linked the two together in time, and you had these things coming across. So to start off with, when it goes down, you can have two constants. This is the permeability and the permeability. I can't even pronounce those two things. There's two constants of space which add up to getting the speed of light, and you can get it more condensed for an electric potential, which is as a single digit scalar, and a vector potential, which is three digits scalar around there. And that gets down. Now the important thing is, I think, is to get a few basic facts out there, and these are basic facts. What is it? So you've got Coulomb's law, and Coulomb's law is a direct consequence of the Gaussian leaky box law. So Gauss's law for charge is that the divergence coming out of a unit box is the amount of charge density in that unit. unit thing. It's sort of like how you can do the integral of gravity for Earth. So the Earth is not, as we model it, a single infinitely small, infinitely dense point at the centre of the Earth and everything's fluff. The fluff itself has mass. And so as you go down on Earth, you don't get even greater and greater field, you get reduced magnetic field. So that's similar for Gauss's law in Coulomb's stuff. And then essentially you get these two things that you've got two types of electric field lines. One is an electric field line which begins at a plus charge and ends at a corresponding minus charge. That's static. Or you can have an electric field line which goes in a loop, goes around in a loop, and you say, oh, that would give an infinite amount of energy then. If I have a line of force which goes in a circle, and it does, it gets an infinite amount of energy. And this is true. You can get a... an amazing amount of energy. And this is a Tesla coil. That is, you have the electric field go in a circle, and then you have a wire, a long 100 meters of wire, all coiled in that circle. You pick it all up. Now, the thing is that any current in that wire creates a field which destroys the field pumping it. So you can get a very small current at a very high voltage, yeah, so it's one of these beautiful trade-off things to come, and you can see that. So you've got two types of electric field. That's between two poles. The poles are positive charge, the lines, or you have circles or loops, and you can only have loops magnetic, you can only get loops of magnetic fields. Now, this sort of deeper understanding means that when you have teachers who teach in a rather slovenly way, they miss this. They tend to draw the electric field lines. Well, therefore, I'm going to draw something analog to it. Now, the magnetic and electric field lines are analog in the loop ones, but not in the line ones. And so there's two different types of field lines that people draw. And also they don't sort of tend to understand that they draw a cartoon style where all the lines are pushed down onto a page so you can count them. But in three dimensions they'd come out of the page and you'd take a slice, it wouldn't look like it. So very rarely do you see in a textbook the field lines drawn even vaguely correctly, which is rather a important thing, because having it squished in a two-dimensional electromagnetic radiation can't work. You have a flat world, it's there. This is because you squash the field lines, which are sort of coming out in three dimensions, you know, one out of the page, brushing your nose and going into the page. We squash that down and fold it onto its side so we can count it. And we've got sort of almost, so we've got a big crinkly electric field, and we iron it out and stick it there artificially, a bit like butterfly counting or something, which I can't quite describe. So you do have this phenomenon. So if you can get your thumb and your forefinger and form a little loop, your left hand, and form a little loop in your right hand, and put your thumb and forefinger of your right hand through the gap of your thumb and forefinger on the left hand, you've got these two surrounding toroidal fields. There's essentially the key fields. So for a transformer, the early transformer, you've got the toroidal transformers. You wrap around, you get a toroidal current, gets a poloidal field, which induces the toroidal current. It's the loop. It's a transformer is very much about intersecting loops. So it's always a loop within in the loop. So if you create a loop, you then generate another loop inside it, and so you get to your fundamental aspects of it there. So the really important thing is to the maths of a loop current is sort of difficult, because we're used to throwing something from high potential down to low potential, sort of throwing a rock and drawing a line, but the physics to actually describe a coil, a loop potential is difficult, because the loop potential means that you can keep on going on and on, getting more and more voltage, and of course you can. You can get as thousands from a 1-volt battery, you can get thousands of volts by getting it to create a field and going around 1 volt per loop, and 1,000 loops, you can get 1,000 volts out of it. So there's this sort of natural thing of saying, well, if I integrate or add up the length along a loop, I can get a... I can sum it up, that's loop integrals. Now, of course, this is what happens in you don't have a battery. Well, what you do is that you get a loop of wire and induce a magnetic field through it, and that creates a pulse battery. So that's the actual induced current is proportional to the time rate of change of the flux going through it. Now, the electrical magnetic flux time. So there's Faraday's law and Ampere's law. So Faraday's law of electrical induction, I induce an electric field. Maxwell's law is I can induce it within a changing electric flux field. It's they're identical. So Faraday, Maxwell and Ampere's law of magnetic induction are saying that the J in a wire, which comes out as generalized as the Biot-Savart law, comes across them. So you've got this fundamental thing that I've got a circular wire, and if I integrate along that wire, that's the amount of force, and you go through there. And then it's got the curl function. And there's this feeling that, because it's written by curl, there's something deep about it. But it is actually the curl version of it. So the curl is an upside-down triangle X. The curl is the curl is a self-vector operator. So simply, how curly is your vector? That is, how curly it is. So if I get a straight rod, it's not very curly. If I get a rod and put a link in it halfway, it's curled, it's bent, it's the curl of it. So look, if I get a rod and put a bend in it halfway, I then create an area. That is, that if I have a rubber band from the top of the rod to the bottom of the rod and I bend it, I create an area. So that area of bend tells me how much it's curling. And that area is maximum 90 degrees. Now, there's these questions. So if you've got 90, that little triangle is 90, and by my mechanism adding it up, I create a vector pointing upwards. So if I lay it on the ground, the length of the vector up is equal to the area of the band of that enclosed triangle, double the enclosed triangle up to the side there. And if I bend it from right to left, it's positive from left to right as it moves. It's negative. Your right hand rule, is it? So yeah, just try and point it out. So if you hold your hand up and you flick your fingers, that arrow up there goes up then. Now, one way of saying what I'm talking about is talk about the area vector. So the curl of the vector field integrated over the surface of area is equal. You can sort of see that you are taking the differential bend in that. So the more it bends, the bigger the vector it is. So your curl dot A is the fraction, the amount of current with respect to the area vector, which is the vector for an area, is again it's a surface vector. It looks at two vectors which lie along the surface, orthogonal, and you do the curl of that, and that will create a vertical vector up. So your area was like a potato, toothpick into a potato. It comes out at 90 degrees there, and you can say what area it is by the cross vector there. So the dot A means that it's sort of not really saying all that much, saying that the integral of curl dot so curl dot B, because I'm a bit concerned. Oh yeah, curl dot B. So curl B dot A is the same as saying the loop integral of B. Is you can see almost without doing any maths that's just a cutesy way of saying it. There's nothing actually profound in using the curl, well, as far as I can see, using the curl. The thing is that it's sort of like a mathematical backflip, which gets people confused. So, look, in summary, we have sort of emerged from a time where we discovered magnetic properties, Oersted and Ampere, and all this. We sort of discovered these fragmented properties, and then someone brought it around and put them all in one book. And then eventually people wrote a shorter and shorter book. But we haven't really organized our way through it all. We're still teaching as a replay of the past, but it's really now properly appropriate to think of a different way of going. And the way of the past is that there's sort of neglected areas which are possibly quite easy to explain, yet we don't take the time to explain to students what curl is, what the divergence is, what the different theories are. It's enough for them to pass any individual test. And so because it's test oriented, we don't unpack things and we don't really explain what curl, divergence, or even Laplacian. But if we did, I think it would help things long term. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.